Hello. Test, yes, thank you. I'm going to start my sermon showing a brief clip, which I will talk about shortly. So I'm going to do that now.
He will not judge by what he sees with his eyes or decide by what he hears with his ears. But with righteousness, he will judge the needy. With justice, he will give decisions for the poor of the earth. I think that's an appropriate scripture to start off, to talk about righteousness and justice, and to talk about justice in our country and justice in a climate that is so wired and hot with angst, with frustration, with systems crumbling. In order to deliver and maintain a lasting presence of social justice, New Zealand must learn and hold our history. There will never be a full sense of justice without a sobering apprehension of our story, the story here in New Zealand. We cannot express justice until we acknowledge the willful disregard of Te Tiriti o Waitangi, breaches brought about by an onslaught of settler economic interest. Learning the scope of treaty mistreatment helps us to poignantly apply an appropriate balm of justice in both abroad and specific ways. The outworking of social justice then confidently calls for a restoration of relationship in light of a historical schism that still gapingly exists.
The speaker in that clip is a guy named Jay Rooker. Have people come across Jay before? No? He wrote the book back in 2018, Huia Come Home. Has anyone heard of the book? No? Cool. Okay. So the clip was part of his introduction to his talk at the Justice Conference last year that Tear Fund hosted online, and Marie and Pratika and I kind of participated in that and watched a lot of that. And as we consider something this morning of the stories that shape us and that shape those around us and, of course, around the world, there was a simple comment that Jay made that captured me as I was thinking about that. And I think, and again, the significance of it being Waitangi weekend. He said, New Zealand must learn and hold our history. New Zealand must learn and hold our history. A simple statement, I think, but one that is crucial. Going through my schooling, I barely remember any New Zealand history being taught. The only thing I remember, and it's so long ago in my schooling that I don't even know if this was taught at school or just assumed or consumed, was the story of Honeheke and cutting down the flagpole. And this story was only recounted as a negative thing to me. There was never any attempt to talk about Honeheke's perspective and what he was doing. There was never any explanation that he was one of the first of the chiefs to sign Te Tiriti o Waitangi. And then only 5 years later, he feels compelled to do this act of protest and cutting it down, cutting down the flagpole. This is not the history that I was told and taught. New Zealand must learn and hold our history. And I started the service this morning with those verses from Deuteronomy that remind the people of God who God is and what they are to do in light of who God is. Deuteronomy, among other things, was written to remind the people of Israel what God expects of them as they are about to enter the promised land. It serves as both an encouragement and a warning to the people to obey God's law, as given through the Ten Commandments. Now, in a common ancient worldview, if the people were obedient to the law, God would bless them. And if they were disobedient to the law, God would punish them. Now, the Gospel of Jesus shows us that that is not the case. But this is definitely how many ancient people saw, and actually probably lots of people still see things today. Deuteronomy also serves as a reminder to remind people of what their commitments are under the covenant that they entered into with God. And starting in their stories of creation, they saw God committing in covenant with humanity from the very beginning, first with Adam and Eve, then with Noah and the rainbow, then with Abraham and the promise of descendants, arguably the most important covenant for the Jewish people, and then with David, and then, of course, as the Jewish writers of the New Testament, most of them unpacked the Jesus event, they saw that as a new covenant in Jesus' death and resurrection. These covenants, first on the part of God, part and activity of God, and entered into by humans, shape the way that God's people have seen their relationship to God throughout history, certainly the history of the Jewish and Christian faiths. The deep commitment on the part of the Creator to maintain relationships with creation is astounding. The lengths with which God goes to rescue God's people when they break the covenant is nothing short of incredible. These stories, this motif of covenant, shaped the people of God. They knew that God takes covenants seriously, even covenants that are made in bad faith or with ulterior motives. God takes these seriously. In 2 Samuel 21, we read of an encounter between David, King David, and the Gibeonites, and I'm going to read it. During the reign of David, there was a famine for 3 successive years. So David sought the face of the Lord. The Lord said, "It is on account of Saul and his blood-stained house. It is because he put the Gibeonites to death." The king summoned the Gibeonites and spoke to them. Now the Gibeonites were not part of Israel, but were survivors of the Amorites. The Israelites had sworn to spare them, but Saul and his zeal for Israel and Judah had tried to annihilate them. David asked the Gibeonites, "What shall I do for you? How shall I make atonement so that you will bless the Lord's inheritance?" The Gibeonites answered him, "We have no right to demand silver or gold from Saul or his family, nor do we have the right to put anyone in Israel to death." "What do you want me to do for you?" David asked. They answered the king, "As for the man who destroyed us and plotted against us so that we have been decimated and have no place anywhere in Israel, let 7 of his male descendants be given to us and killed, and their bodies exposed before the Lord at Gibeah of Saul, the Lord's chosen one." So the king said, "I will give them to you." Not a particularly pleasant story, is it? But the Gibeonites originally tricked the Israelites into making a treaty with them. You can read about that in Joshua 9. Despite this trickery, all those years later, God required David to uphold the treaty that had been made, and it had brutal consequences for those who hadn't held up their end. Fortunately, we aren't living in the Iron Age where that kind of violence was so commonplace, certainly in New Zealand, I guess. Instead, we are in a time in which we are called as God's people to adhere to our commitments, to follow God, to be in covenant, even if it is uncomfortable, to uphold commitments that have been made. Jay Ruka also said in that clip, the outworking of social justice then confidently calls for a restoration of relationship in light of a historical schism that still gapingly exists. God is calling us to be a people of reconciliation, people whose focus is on restoration of relationship. This is the call of the church, to partner with the Spirit of the risen Christ as the Spirit brings the kingdom to earth as it is in heaven. That means where wrongs have been done, we are responsible for working towards reconciliation. We are called to live in deep commitment to one another and to God so that we are people of restoration. In the story of New Zealand, the church started off relatively well. There are many accounts of the early missionaries who sided with tangata whenua and sought their well-being and protection. Sadly, by the time of the New Zealand Wars, of course, that had shifted and the church chose to side with the power of the colonizing forces. We, as the ancient Israelites were, are called to be a people of covenant commitment to God, God's world, and everything in it. Imagine a time that we worked all together for the common good of everyone. The trouble is, as the church did in that time around the wars, It's easier to go with the status quo or what seems more comfortable, isn't it? But what if our lives actually depended on this working together for the good of everyone? What if we were so deeply committed to one another and God's world that everything we did was for the good of the other? And as I was thinking about those questions, I was reminded of a scene from the end of Finding Nemo. And I think it has some profound things to say to us. So for those of you who haven't seen it, it's an old film, so I'm not going to give a spoiler alert. To set it up, Marlin, Nemo's dad, has been searching for Nemo throughout the entire film, thus the name Finding Nemo. He's given up, though, believing Nemo to be dead. And that's where we're going to pick the scene up, hopefully.
Nemo? Nemo?
Dad! Nemo,
Dory? Nemo!
Dad!
Nemo! I'm coming, Nemo!
Dad!
Nemo!
Dad!
Oh, thank goodness. It's all right, son. It's going to be okay.
Turn around! You're going the wrong way!
You're right. I know you can.
Look at Finn!
Now go! Hurry!
Tell all the fish to swim down!
Well, you heard my son? Come on!
Dory, you have to tell everybody to
swim down together! Do you understand what I'm saying to you? Swim down!
Imagine if the fish hadn't listened. Imagine if they'd all tried to swim to the top to save themselves. Instead, they listened to the small voice of a fish they didn't know. A small voice that would often be overlooked. And they found a common goal. And achieving that goal was the difference between life and death. In that moment, they chose to work together. And through that work, they found freedom. They found life. What if we here at Wellington South had such a common purpose that we were working and walking towards, that through that work and the power of the Spirit of Christ, we were to find freedom for ourselves and those around us, in our neighborhoods and beyond? Not through threat of violence or death, but through the promise of restoration and reconciliation. in Aotearoa, New Zealand, as a nation, we have committed to working in covenant through the treaty with tangata whenua and tangata tiriti. As we reflect on Waitangi Weekend, imagine if we also, as a nation, saw ourselves working together for a common goal, as if our lives depended on it. And if we're honest enough to take notice, people's lives actually do depend on this. Our God is a God who takes covenants and commitments seriously. We saw that at the end of last year in our series on what it means to be Baptist, that early Baptists also noticed that loud motif of covenant throughout Scripture. Whether it was with the covenant with Adam or Noah or Abraham, Moses and Israel, and of course through Jesus, they saw that God expected a people who were deeply committed because of God's commitment to us. They saw that God expected a response to that commitment and for us to be faithful to God. And they then committed, the early Baptists then committed, as I said so many times in that series, to watching over one another in love and to walking together in the ways of the Lord, both known and to be made known. This Waitangi Weekend, will we let the story of broken covenant of the past shape the future? Or will we let the God of deep commitment and covenant shape the future? And will we be people of reconciliation and restoration? Will we be part of outworking the social justice that confidently calls for the restoration of relationship in light of the historical schism that still gapingly exists? I pray that this is the case for us. And as we reflect, we're going to finish our service and take communion together. Communion, of course, the institution. Communion, of course, is the